The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hey folks, I challenge you to think of at least one thing you no longer do that you wish you could. Do you miss like playing golf, maybe long walks with your spouse, sleeping through the night? Are you ready to start living without pain? My colleagues and friends, Hugh Hewitt, Dennis Prager, Mike Gallagher, have been talking about their own successful experience with Relief Factor, and you can add Eric Metaxas to that list. Relief Factor is changing the lives of tens of thousands of Salem radio listeners by reducing and even eliminating daily aches and pains. ReliefFactor.com is full of great success stories, and now I am on board. For just $19.95, Relief Factor is offering a three-week quick start that could help you live your life with little to no pain. Go to ReliefFactor.com to see testimonials from folks all over the country. I love reading them. Over 70% of those that try Relief Factor continue as a customer. Feel the relief and get back your independence and freedom from the aches and pains of everyday life. Go to ReliefFactor.com. Read the testimonies. I tell all my relatives to take it. ReliefFactor.com.
Taxes Show.
People tell me that since I'm the announcer, it's not about me, Todd Wilkerson. They say that my job is to serve the host of the show, Eric Metaxas.
What nonsense. I've known Eric for years, and you can take it from me. You just can't depend on him.
Mark my words, one day you'll blink and he'll be gone.
Off to fleece the next group of suckers.
But I'll always be here, no matter what, right here for you. Put your feet up and tell me all about it. Oh, yeah. And now your host,
if he's even still showing up,
Eric Metaxas.
Hey, folks. Welcome to the Eric Metaxas show, bunker version. We're all in our bunkers. I'm in my parents' basement. Chris Himes, are you there?
I am. Hello.
Are you there, Albin?
Yeah, tell me when we're going to start, because I want to look my best. Oh, but you should have told me.
You know, we're experiencing a pandemic right now. This is no time for joking. I'm just going to keep it very real. Very prayerful, very sober. James, is that clear?
Loud and clear, sir.
Yeah. Actually, no, we want to start with some good news. We have good news. Our friend Kevin McCullough, our Salem radio friend, Kevin McCullough, tweeted something this morning that this is not a joke. A cure has been found for not a vaccine to prevent it, but a cure has been found. And I'm going to put that on Facebook. And I'm going to put it on Twitter. It's a real cure, and it's something that exists in vast quantity. So it's not like we have to invent it and manufacture it and all that kind of stuff. So that's like incredibly good news. And we'll talk about that more in a moment. But we've got a lot of stuff to cover here. The parade was canceled. We're going to talk about that. But you know, I guess what I was thinking. I hope you guys don't mind my bringing this up. I just feel it's important right now that as we open the show today, we've got what I would consider an important history lesson that I want to share with everybody listening, especially those of you watching on video, because these are the bunker videos. They're going to be very historic themselves. But this is not a joke of any kind, shape, matter, or form, and it's not even something calculated to entertain you in the slightest. What it is, however, is something that should, and I believe will, give us perspective on what's happening right now in our country. What am I talking about? Many years ago, many people might not remember it because it happened a long time ago, but back in the 70s, actually, there was another Chinese virus that was sweeping the nation. It was changing the way we lived. For many of us growing up at that time, it gave us a voice and it made us feel like we had something to say to the world. But what is that other Chinese virus, you wonder? Well, I suppose you could say it was a dance craze, but it was really much more than that. It was a way of life. Many of us who experienced it when it happened knew we would never be the same. And a lot of us mark our lives as before this original Chinese virus and after it. It was just that big of an event. Anyway, I believe that the following song will explain what I'm talking about. This is the other Chinese virus. It will explain more eloquently in the music, more eloquently even than I, who am known to be eloquent, can put it. So please listen carefully. And my friends, prepare yourselves to have your minds thoroughly blown by what I'm about to play.
Everybody was kung fu fighting. Those kids were fast as lightning. In fact, it was a little bit frightening. But they fought with expert timing. There were funky Chinamen from funky Chinatown. They were chopping them up. They were chopping them.
I apologize for having to shut it off, but I know it spoke to a lot of Americans who are listening in right now. Chris Himes, Albin, do you remember that song?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. I remember exactly the first time I heard it.
It changed a lot of lives.
Yeah, I don't think there was a known cure for that one either at the time.
No. I don't even know if Kevin McCullough was born. Well, actually, he was probably in grammar school when that came out. But we need to remember the first Chinese virus that took this nation by storm. I think it's the right thing to do. We need to have historical perspective. A lot of the lyrics of that song today might even be considered racist. But since it was sung by a black man, obviously it can't be racist. We know that's just a rule in the culture, in the mob culture, in the woke culture. So I think it's cool. But I just thought it's important to share that that really was the first Chinese virus that swept the nation. We got through it. Here we are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was Funky Billy Chin and Little Sammy Chung.
Little Sammy Chung. People want to know what happened to Little Sammy Chung. A lot of people have asked that question on the internet, and nobody really knows. Some people say Little Sammy Chung was killed in Nam with the beaver, but that's not even possible because the song came out years after we pulled out of Vietnam.
He could have gone back anyway.
Well, actually, being Chinese, really, that has nothing to do with Vietnam. The reality is that people say that he went to live with the Bigfoots up in Canada. Other people say he opened up a tattoo parlor on Venice Beach. And then there's a smaller group that says that he trained the Bigfoots, I think it's the right term, to do kung fu fighting. And that he even trained some of them to shave parts of their fur and to get tattoos. And then the fur grew back. And then only they knew the secret tattoo that they had. I don't know why I'm sharing this right now because there's a lot going on in the culture. Maybe we should talk about this another time.
Is there any connection to Boogie Fever? Was that related in any way?
Boogie Fever is an African thing. It's very, very different. Boogie Fever. We should talk about that in another program. We should.
What about a Basketball Jones? I got a Basketball Jones.
No, that's different. That's you don't want to have a Jones because then there's no cure for that. I want to talk about what's happening in New York right now. I'm serious. I went into Central Park yesterday. Everywhere I looked, there were people jogging and having a good time. Like it was, It was the strangest thing. Have you noticed, like, in your communities, what's going on?
Yeah, my wife and I go on the Rockefeller Preserve. There's like 50 miles of walking trails, and that's no exaggeration. And there are people everywhere. At first, I thought George Romero was in town, and he was doing like a sequel, because they were everywhere. They were looking. They had their kids. They had their families. It was actually, it's a beautiful thing, to tell you the truth. They can't go to the movies. They can't go to the restaurants. So they're going out.
They're forced to be together as families, and that stinks. Let me tell you right now.
Yeah.
Seriously, yesterday in the park, I saw so many people out gambling and cutting their capers, and the flowers are out. And I thought the flowers did not get the memo that they're all going to die. You know, like, what are they doing? What are they doing out? But it really is bizarre. New York is it's alive, except for the restaurants and all the stores and stuff.
Well, now yesterday
we're out of time. We're going to have a serious conversation now. No more joking. We're going to have a very serious conversation on fracking. Stay tuned.
In fact, it was a little bit frightening, but they fought with expert timing. There were funky Chinamen from funky Chinatown. They were chopping. Moses, I have been removed. I have seen the specter. He has been here too. Distant cousin from down the line. Brand of people who ain't my kind.
Oh, hey there, folks. It's the Eric from Texas Show. Guess who's back? Phelim and Ann, that's Phelim McAleer and Ann McElhenney. And I don't know what you guys are talking about, but the microphones are on.
Ooh.
And anything you say may be broadcast to the world. So now, you're journalists, you're Irish journalists, but you live in the States.
That's right.
Oh, racist.
Oh, God, yeah.
Racist. You live
cultural,
in the States.
Cultural appropriation. States.
And you love drinking green beer, don't you?
Thanks be to God.
Thanks be to God. No, but you, how long have you been in the United States?
About 10 years.
And I want to get your story, if you don't mind, what you can tell. You've been married, what, 20 years?
Yes.
Yes.
And how did you meet?
We met at a political conference. Phelim doesn't like the story at all.
Is that true?
Correct.
Why?
He doesn't look good. I look good.
Anyway, we were talking about environmentalism, weren't we, Eric?
No. Not at all.
We were talking about...
Bite your tongue, sir.
We were talking about matters of public importance.
All right. No, I'm just curious because you know what? You're very... if people can see this on camera and some people are listening, but to get to know the two of you, you're a very cute couple. There's something about you that's very cute. And I was just curious how it was that you came to meet. Were you both journalists when you met?
No, I was a teacher.
And I was a journalist.
And you were a journalist. And what were you teaching in?
I taught religion and English literature.
Where?
In Ireland.
Where?
At that time, I was thinking I was teaching in Ballyshannon, in County Donegal.
Then you went to where?
Then I went to what?
Meath, Ashburn.
Oh, then I went to Ashburn.
Okay, so you were not a journalist. So wait, you were teaching English lit?
Yep.
And religion?
Yes.
What era of English lit? What level?
You know, for high school.
Mostly dead white men, I think.
I love it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I was an English major in college, so of course we can talk privately later. But did you become a journalist as a result of
meeting
your
this
marriage
one?
With
yes,
Phelim?
Yes, correct. I always had an interest, though, in journalism. I had done a radio journalism course, in fact, before we met. And then I met him. We moved to Romania. We lived in Romania.
Okay, why did Phelim you move?
I got a job as the Financial Times correspondent for Eastern Europe for that part of the world, Bulgaria, Romania, and the Republic of Moldova.
God between us and all harm.
So Financial Times, FT,
yes,
sent you there
yes
to cover
so the
that
post,
part of the
yeah
world.
Well, the post-communist, you know, after the kind of after the freedom that had arrived in Romania. So
were you
post,
near Cluj?
No, but we went to Cluj many times.
Often.
I've only been to Romania once, and I went to Cluj, which
Cluj is
the capital of Transylvania.
Yes. And in fact, Transylvania was where we had our conversion from being liberal to rather conservative.
So you were politically on the liberal side,
yes,
and something
course
happened.
We were a European journalist. You're not allowed to be a member of the club. Unless
you're certainly not going to work for the
position.
FT.
No.
What was it that happened in Romania? What story were you covering that began to shift you thinking?
So we basically there was a gold mine that was opening in Transylvania.
Literally,
yes, a very large
gold mine.
A literal gold mine in a place called Roche, Montana. It had been there had been mining going on there for about 1,000 years prior to the Canadians arriving. But prior to the Canadians arriving, who wanted to open a mine there, the communists had been running a mine. And obviously, you know how much the communists care about the environment. The Canadians
came
along.
All you have to do is go to China and breathe the air, and you'll know exactly how much they care
about the environment. Mm-hmm. So the Canadians were coming, you know, a big Canadian gold mining company wanted to open a mine there. It was a very large gold deposit, probably the biggest gold mine in Europe at the time, potentially.
Right.
And the environmentalists were up in arms. They didn't want this mine to open. So we went
to foreign environmentalists.
I was just going to say, I don't imagine that in a country under the communist boot of Ceausescu that there's anybody thinking about environmentalism.
Yes.
So, of course, it is... Outsiders came in.
Yes.
Rich outsiders. Two women, in fact.
Okay.
One a Belgian and one a Swiss. The two women came in who led the
Belgian and a Swiss. Whose side were the Swiss on in World War II?
That's a good one.
Did they fight Hitler? Let's just leave that question out there.
Well,
Alban, get back to me on where the Swiss were. Nonetheless.
Do you know where the Irish were?
Yeah.
So...
I didn't want to get so far afield. I was just trying to make a cheap crack there.
Okay, well, the Irish were neutral as well, but we'll talk about that later.
But that's a little more complicated.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay. I don't find Nazism that complicated, but we'll talk about...
All right. We can get back to that, but I just want to say that... So this conversion politically happens in Romania. Yeah. There's a gold mine. Continue the story.
So basically, we went to cover it. Phelim, at that point, I was... I don't know what was that...
You were freelancing. We went up there to cover it with the story already written. And, the headline, evil mining company sucks the life out of little village. And the company was going to knock down a lot of the village, but they were going to build people these lovely homes a mile
down
away.
The valley.
Or down the valley, wherever they wanted. And to show the example, they built this beautiful house in the village saying, you can live in this house.
You can live in a house like this if you give us your house, which, by the way, they couldn't sell their houses.
Two-thirds of the houses had no running water. Like in Europe in 2000, two-thirds of the houses had no bathrooms.
They're really,
right?
really appalling.
And
this is one of these cases where
it improved their lives.
The evil mining company would have actually helped these people.
Yeah. And by the way, the evil mining company had gotten approval from just about everybody. The World Bank thought they were a great idea, the IMF, all these people. But basically, we went into this model home and we saw an older lady crying. 86-year-old crying. And we're thinking, oh, here's our story. Here's the story now. Went up and I interviewed this old lady and said, like, you're upset. Obviously, these Canadians are upsetting you. And no, she wasn't upset about the Canadians. She was just hoping that she would live long enough to live in a house like that. And it was overwhelming to her that the potential was that she could live in this beautiful house. And here's the news for you. She did not live long enough to live in a house like that because that mine never opened. And the reason that mine never opened was because the environmentalists lied.
Yes.
And we're up there learning this story. We're like getting the blinkers taken off and we're thinking we're going to win a Pulitzer Prize here. This is an incredible story. Here we have a country and these people who have been basically under the heel of the communists. They've just got out from under that. And guess who's come in to replace the heel of the communists, the environmentalists, who took away the dreams of a village. That mine has never opened because of lies.
In other words, there's a moment. Now, by the way, just for my audience, we're going to be talking about fracking. That's where we're going with this conversation because Anne and Phelim have created a documentary film called Frack Nation. But I'm interested in this story because how you came to where you are. So you come into this country and you, for some reason, and this is I always find this fascinating, you're open-minded enough that you're willing to listen to this act to figure out what's really going on, even though there's a push from your editors at FT to tell a certain kind of story. You weren't willing to do that.
No, I mean, and it's almost assumed that you're going to take the environmentalist line. And what you do is you write 800 words of the environmentalist thing, and then you give the company three paragraphs to respond. And, I mean, I remember I wrote a story for the Financial Times, and I said, in the middle of it, I said, however, most of the, after several trips to the village, the FT has discovered most of their claims are exaggerated or are not correct. And I explained that. And my editor took it out. And the next day I phoned up. I said, what are you doing? And he goes, oh, you're editorializing. And I'm going, what's the point in having a correspondent on the ground if you're not going to accept? But for him, it was just crazy. They couldn't. The default position is you print the environmental claims and you don't print, you never question it. You're a stenographer, and I wasn't prepared to be a stenographer.
Well, you're just pushing a certain narrative,
yes,
which is the antithesis of journalism.
Yes, yes.
And by the way, if ever that was true, it's true in this fracking story, which I know you want to segue into.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's exactly what's happened here, where you have all the world media going to these fracking places where fracking is going on. They interview people who are anti-fracking and they just let it go. They just leave it there,
yeah,
whatever they say. So you have people saying the most ludicrous things. I'll give you one example, which we highlighted, by the way, in our movie. One of the big anti-fracking voices out of Dimock, Pennsylvania, is a guy who says that, you know, in my water, in the water here in my tap, we've got weapons-grade uranium.
Three types of uranium.
Two
of them weapons-grade.
Two of them weapons-grade. And they just let that go.
In other words, they didn't check it.
It's ludicrous, by the way.
And it's not true.
Well, it's not true.
As I said, if all this filmmaking and content production doesn't work out, I'm going to retire, move to Dimock, Pennsylvania, bottle the water.
Uranium.
The uranium, two of the weapons-grade uranium, and sell it to the Iranian Secret Service.
Yeah,
right? Because they won't.
Why
do you need centrifuges if you've got
it's already available from a tap? So basically, we noticed that with this fracking story, that is a huge story in the United States, and by the way, will become a massive story this year, where you have basically every Democrat, by the way, is saying I'll ban it. You know, Elizabeth Warren, I will, on my first day in office, I will ban fracking. By the way, she has no idea what she's talking about. There are a million fracked wells in the United States.
And
the first
not one bit of evidence has ever polluted water, but. Where is fracking? Fracking is in Pennsylvania.
Ohio.
And guess what the big swing states are? And you know where they get the sand for fracking? Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So there's parts of Wisconsin that are booming because they supply the sand for fracking in Ohio and Pennsylvania. And you're standing up saying, I'm going to ban fracking. I'm going to put hundreds of thousands of people out of work and their families.
And destroy the economy.
So the question is, how big will Trump's landslide be? Not whether he will have a landslide, but how big. We're going to go to a break. We'll be right back with Ann and Phelim. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. There, folks. This is the Eric Metaxas Show, and I'm talking to Ann McElhenney and Phelim McAleer. Phelim is P-H-E-L-I-M, who are journalists. I say Irish journalists, but at this point, you're journalists who once lived in Ireland. And we're talking about fracking. You did a documentary called Frack Nation. But I just want to go back briefly. You said that it was in Romania that you began to turn politically because the story of the evil mining company proved to be
completely
false,
true.
And your editors at the Financial Times were pushing a certain, you know, predictable narrative.
Yeah, I wouldn't even call it pushing. It's the default narrative, right?
Even worse.
I remember we showed this film to a bunch of, I can't remember, was it mining, people who work for a mining company, Rio? I can't remember.
Talking about Frack Nation.
Frack Nation. No. The one, we made a documentary about the mining.
In Romania.
Romania.
Called Mine Your Own Business.
The
title of the film in Romania is called Mine Your Own Business.
Yeah.
Yes, boom, boom.
Thank you.
Your heroes. Okay,
thank
go
you.
Ahead.
So I remember one moment at the end, I said, yeah, it's really funny. I used to work for a not-for-profit, an environmental not-for-profit, and now I work for the mining company. She goes, I remember we did media training, right? You know, how to talk to the media.
Oh, I remember this story.
And when I worked for the not-for-profit, the environmental not-for-profit, the first thing the media training person said, listen, relax, right? Don't worry. Be calm. Because you know what? The media is on your side. And that was a media trainer, and she was telling the truth behind closed doors. And to me, that's the antithesis of being a journalist.
Yeah.
I'm on your side. I'm not on your side, you know? So So I wouldn't, you know, pushing, it's just that's default journalism nowadays, is you're a stenographer for people who claim things.
For Greenpeace.
And you also, if somebody files a lawsuit, you report it breathlessly as if it's true. Listen, I could file a lawsuit saying that Eric Metaxas is a green monster who's going to abduct all our children tomorrow. And you can actually go down the road and file it in the court.
Yeah.
And they will accept
yeah.
it. Right? And then people can report it. And it's like, this is a lawsuit that it bears no relation to the truth. And many
so
lawsuits.
So if I were to sue someone for rape or something like yes. that, in other words, it gets a lot of headlines, but it may have no basis.
Yes.
And people in the journalistic world are no longer taking their job seriously enough
yes.
to be clear about this.
Yes, I mean, it's like all these fake hoax hate attacks, like Jussie Smollett.
Well, we were just talking about that.
Don't say anything bad about my man Jussie.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm kidding.
So Jussie Smollett, I mean, by the way,
that is one of the worst stories.
Yeah, but everyone went for it. I mean, everyone thought it was a great idea.
Oh, no, all the journalists.
The journalists. Yeah, that's how it was breathless, as you say, breathlessly reported.
But you look at Twitter, the world was all going, this is a, you know, everybody else outside this journalist, and it's not a bubble. They pretend, you know, they pretend there's no hoax. I mean, surely at this stage they have to say, when there's another of these hate attacks, there have been an increase in attacks since President Trump was elected. Well, surely they should also say there have been an increase in hoax.
Well, by the way, people need to know, on Twitter, my wife and I this morning watched Dave Chappelle, the comedian, a piece on Jussie Smollett.
Oh, it's
one
brilliant.
Of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Jussie Smollett.
Yeah, he says he's a Frenchman. But it's so brilliant. And, you know, he talks about how black people were the first ones to see through. They knew something was wrong, they kind of, you know, kept quiet about it, while the media, the white media, ran with it because it fit the narrative. But let's just go back again. When were you in Romania? When did you make this film, Mind Your Own Business?
We made that about 2006 or something like that.
So both of you had a shift politically as a result of that experience.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an extraordinary thing for people later in life. I mean, none of us here to have...
Well, it's very simple, by the way.
Interesting.
What happened to us with that story was, it was very clear to us, whose side would you be on? Are you on the side of the 86-year-old who's never going to get the lovely home that she'd love to have with the lovely indoor bathroom and the warm shower? Or are you on the side of the two rich women with far too much time on their hands, the Swiss woman and the Belgian woman, who, by the way, won accolades everywhere? They won the Goldman Prize, won all these prizes, and then moved on to the next community of poor people whose lives they could destroy. It was so easy to work out what side you were on. We were talking to the villagers. All the villagers loved the Canadian mining company and wanted the mining company to come there. And, you know, how would you work out if the local village wanted the mining company to come there? Maybe look at the local election. One candidate was pro the mine, and that candidate overwhelmingly won the mayoral election.
He got almost an embarrassing vote.
And the BBC did not report on that. So that's what sort of set us up. That's what started us on this road to where we then made a number of documentaries looking at the environmental movement critically, culminating in Frack Nation, where fracking is obviously the big story now in terms of the environment. It's a massive story in 2020, where you have every Democratic candidate saying, we're going to ban this.
Okay, now
we're
why
ban this.
Do they say fracking is bad? Why?
Because it's a fossil fuel.
It's an American fossil fuel, actually.
It's an American fossil fuel.
No. It's a right-wing American fossil fuel.
Oh, the worst kind.
It's a Trump-supporting fossil fuel.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so they just have an animus to begin with against fossil fuels.
Yeah. Yes.
And so
No. They don't have an animus against Chinese fossil fuels. They don't have an animus against Russian fossil fuels or Venezuelan fossil fuels. They only have an animus against American-produced fossil
fuels. Okay, so we're not joking. In other words, we know that in places like China, the level... Oh, you know what? We're going to a break. We'll be right back, folks. Do not go away. Why would you?
Thank you.
Hey there, folks. I'm talking to Phelim McAleer and Anne McElhenney, who have done many things, a number of documentaries. Frack Nation is the documentary where's that available?
I think people can get it probably on Amazon still.
Okay.
You know, just go to fracknation.com or go
they can go to fracknation.com.
I think they can. I'm not 100% sure, but yeah. Okay.
I think you need an online assistant.
We do.
You have so many things happening.
That's true.
I want to make
sure
that people can find their way to it.
Thank you.
But we talk a lot about fracking on our podcast, The Ann and Phelim Scoop.
Yes. Okay, there's The Ann and Phelim Scoop. I want people
to
mention
that. It's a weekly podcast.
It's a weekly podcast.
Ann with an E?
Without.
Okay, Ann and Phelim,
P-H-E-L-I-M.
Ann and Phelim Scoop.com or no?
Yes.
Okay.
We have cats. There's cats on it.
And we have cats, cats appear regularly on our show.
You have kitty cats on the podcast? Wait, it's a
We do a video as well as audio.
YouTube.
Now we're getting somewhere. Yeah. Excellent. And you're on YouTube as well?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, okay, good, fine. All right, so Frack Nation. Now, I just bring this up because growing up in America with the gas lines and OPEC and all this kind of stuff and the embargo, I never in a million years dreamt it would be possible. Never that we would not be dependent on foreign oil.
It's amazing.
Okay.
It's amazing.
And it's kind of like thinking that, you know, the Soviet Union will never fall. When it fell, you just thought, this can't be happening in my lifetime.
Yeah.
The idea that we are energy independent is just insane.
Exactly.
I really
express
it.
And by the way, you know what's really sad is this oil and gas, American oil and gas story is miraculous and wonderful, and it's not told. It's not told at all.
Well, because it's kind of a pro-Trump story.
I mean, you know, exactly. And luckily, Trump understands how oil and gas makes people prosperous.
Yeah.
And I always make the point, you know, this is about hairdressers. This is about small communities in Pennsylvania, in Ohio, where the hairdressing salon was nearly boarding up because there was no money happening in the town. And now they've got, like, taken on extra people. You know, suddenly they've got money.
Well,
it's a huge thing.
In other words, this is the rising tide that lifts all boats. Yes. When you have this kind of prosperity, everybody benefits.
We were up in North Dakota, and we met a guy at the airport, a Mexican guy, and he was sitting there, and he was going to – all these workers, these young men out working really hard in the oil fields, and he was starting a thing called the Bakken Burrito. Right,
the what?
The Bakken. So it's the Bakken oil field, and he was going to set up a thing, and it was going to be a food truck going around the oil fields selling. And you know, and he was sitting there in the airport and talking to us, saying, "How much do you think I could charge for that? They earn a lot of money." But then, you know, and he was saying $10, $12. But he was this Mexican immigrant was setting up a business.
But this is the point: entrepreneurship. You know, when you begin to realize what our system here in America. It makes possible. It's so beautiful. And in the case of fracking, as you're saying, I mean, I would be the first one, if there were really serious environmental concerns, I would say, wait a minute.
Yeah.
But you're telling me nonsense.
I'm on the record saying if there's any case where fracking has provably contaminated water, poisoned water, then fracking should be, there should be a moratorium in fracking. No one's ever come up with a scientific before and after.
Well, then why, so the question is, why do leftist environmentalist activists continue to say, why are they, I mean, we know that they have an animus against fossil fuels in America, period. But what is it about fracking that they are saying is so terrible?
It's so successful.
Yes.
It really shuts them down. I mean, they were having parties about peak oil. They just loved peak oil. We were going to run out of oil. It was great. And they would all
What's peak oil?
Peak oil was this whole story that went on.
The world is running out of oil.
We're running out of oil. We've had this peak, and now it's all going to fall away. So these fossil fuels. And the truth is, what's actually happened is because of this new method of fracking with the horizontal drilling that they're doing through shale, because of that, there is this massive resource of hydrocarbons suddenly released into the world. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing. And I just love telling people this because people don't know. So a frack job takes about a day or 2 days. This isn't something that goes, right, that's what happens. They do a frack job. They have this huge amount of equipment and a massive
industrialization.
They go there to this spot. They do this frack job for a day or 2 days. And they release the pressure where the hydrocarbons are under the ground, and that's either a natural gas or it's oil. Then they take the frack away. They take the whole massive rigging away, and what happens?
You're left with a tiny
footprint.
Smaller than the studio.
Where oil and natural gas come out of the ground for 10, 20, 30 years.
Can I just say
years? I mean, it's an amazing thing, and basically the amount of resources out there is just tremendous, and it ends up curing so many problems because energy poverty is a massive problem, and for all these people, you know, I don't wish ill on people, but I think people are very divorced from energy poverty. People are very divorced from what that means, how that feels like.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, we went one time, that documentary we talked about off air, we did a documentary called Mind Your Own Business, and we were shooting in Madagascar, where they had some energy poverty issues, and the electricity every day went out. And I remember we were out somewhere walking around, and suddenly we're plunged into darkness. And I remember thinking, oh my God, I could get killed now just for the fact that there aren't lights on the road, that you could literally fall because we were by a beach and there was a cliff and all this kind of thing. And I was thinking, oh my God, we could die just now for nothing, for no reason, because people forget how amazing it is to have reliable, safe, reliable energy.
Well, because we can't imagine a world without it.
And most people, by the way, can I just say this one thing? And I think this is the crux of it. These young people who have so much to say about energy and about how bad oil, all those people doing divestment programs up in Harvard, all those idiots get into a shower every day. They have these great, they walk into the shower, power shower, warm water. Trust me, they have no idea where the energy for that shower comes from. But my God, they'd miss it. They would miss it. And all of those cars, and all the cars they have, all the, you know, those Priuses that they have out in California, they don't know that those cars are powered by coal.
Right.
This is how idiotic they are. And so, you know, this is why this story has to be told. Over and over again, this story has to be told. And I'm actually looking forward to this election, because in this election, people are going to get an education on energy. But we noticed something. Phelim and I just noticed something so interesting. The mainstream media have suddenly just worked this out. They've suddenly worked out, oh my God, if the Democrats hang on to this banning fracking issue, they will lose, and they will lose big time.
Right.
In Pennsylvania, in Ohio, Wisconsin, with the sand.
Yeah.
And they have, do you know what they've started to do? They've started to do stories where they're saying fracking is a big problem for the election.
Really?
And I tell you what, they're beginning to understand that.
They're trying to tell the candidates, shut your mouth.
Do we have four more minutes with these folks? Can you hang on?
Sure.
Okay. Don't go away.
Everybody was kung fu fighting.
Hey, folks, we're back. I hope you're digging the groovy music. If you missed our opening segment, let me just say, keep on missing it, because you didn't miss anything. The opening segment was an embarrassment to us, to Salem Media Group that we represent.
We're sorry.
And to all those of you who participated by listening, by watching it on YouTube, shame on you, okay?
Don't share.
You, Chris Himes, Albin, James, what are you even thinking? What is wrong with you people?
I didn't think positive.
We are doing an amazing thing with Food for the Poor. We haven't talked about it this hour. We've been talking about fracking. But I have to tell you, we are doing a great job with Food for the Poor. Those of you who have not yet given to Food for the Poor, go to metaxastalk.com. Be sure to click on the banner. Do we have any audio we want to play for that? We can play it tomorrow. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
The point is that I want to say that we're doing a great job. We're not there yet, but I just want to reiterate that every week we're doing we're pulling a grand prize winner. Everybody who gives that week gets to win like an insane grand prize. We've mentioned it many times. I'm not going to go into it, but I do want to say that whenever bad things are happening, one thing we can do. Well, two things we can do. We can pray. And I do think that we should pray that God would use this weird time to turn people back to him, to turn families back to each other, to spend time with each other that they wouldn't have. I've got my daughter home, which is an amazing blessing. for us during this time. And there's a lot of weird stuff going on. Pray that God would use it for his purposes. Please pray, because I really think that these really weird things can lead to revival. I actually am believing God for that genuinely. But I want to say another great thing you can do right now to do something good in the midst of all this, if you feel powerless, is go to MetaxasTalk.com, click on the banner for Food for the Poor, and give anything you can to Food for the Poor, because there are families in Guatemala literally dealing with severe malnutrition. $80 of our American money. That's how amazing things are right now. If you have any money to spare, not everybody does, but if you do, please go to Food for the Poor, the banner at MetaxasTalk.com, and give what you can. $320, which is $27 a month. That's a great way to do it if you've got a family and you want to teach your kids your values as a family. Give $27 a month, and you'll be feeding a family of four for an entire year. That's for $27 a month, $320 a year. You're also giving them water for a lifetime, because many of these people do not have clean drinking water. It's horrific. We've talked about it on the program before, what they have to do to get water, and then even the water that they get through absurd means, even that water is not safe. It's a tough situation. So if you want to do something good during this time, you feel a little bit helpless, please go to MetaxasTalk.com. Please give generously to Food for the Poor. They really are depending on us right now. And as you know, since we're all focused on ourselves and what we're going through, we tend to forget about them. So we really do need your help. We want everybody involved in this program to please do what you can to help them out. What else do we have to talk about, Albin? We're just about out of time.
We should remind people that we
want everyone who listens to this program to subscribe to honorboundcoffee.com. If you don't drink coffee, you can subscribe for a friend, honorboundcoffee.com. Every penny that they make in profit goes to help military families. That is so amazing. I can't even tell you. I feel thrilled that they are a sponsor. honorboundcoffee.com. We'll catch you later on. Thanks for listening. From funky Chinatown. They were chopping. We're chopping.